Blog Talk Radio.
The security interval, because I want to tell that person or those people whose job it is that they suck at it.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Sure, this is Johnny Pennegal.
We're coming at you with another edition of the Fightings Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Tonight we have two special guests, Tony the Tornado and Rapper Ross Rich Bergeron. We started off with that little clip there from hearing regarding, I think it was the Madoff situation there, back when that first broke. There was a famous senator's tirade there against one of the people from the SEC on how they missed the vote. But that's the grading from sciencesucks.com, too. And last night, I actually just did an interview for another website called InternetVoicesRadio.com. If you go to the What's Happening tab there, you can see the interview that I did about Internet activism. I mentioned science a few times. And I figured we'd spend a little bit of the show on the topic since we never know. Next week at this time, since I'll be actually coming back at 5 a.m. next Thursday from my trip to see the trustee science case down there in Illinois. I think we have to sign some kind of confidentiality agreement or something in that regard to close this out. I might not even be able to talk about this week.
Oh, ludicrous.
Right? We gotta get it out there while we can. But I do have like a little clip going back. I think it was the very last hearing I had. It's definitely the last one that I taped legally. I got the legal tape anyway. The hearing was September 10th, 2008, one that I really ripped into the other side. So I actually sent it to the trustees beforehand, before I go down there to negotiate with them, to kind of tell them, hey, this is what it's all about. This is why I take it so seriously. And, it's probably one of my best performances so far, even though somebody said another hearing was that I don't have a tape on. But I think once I move on from this and get some payment for what I've gone through there, I'm going to try to get every single hearing recorded legally so I can put it into a documentary. And just recently, last night actually, I ended up talking to a woman who's connected to the other case I'm dealing with, and she has a case where her sister's trying to take care of for everything, and she needs legal help to do it herself because her lawyers are screwing over. And she's got a history of doing documentaries, and she's local, she's like 20 minutes away, so it'll be a great person to get to know and build from there, because this is a great case. It's just that I don't know if the internet's the right format for it. It's kind of getting stale on the internet. People are taking my stuff, like I said before, and cutting and pasting it and acting like it's their own. It's almost to the point where I just want to take it all off the internet, except for like some of the recordings and stuff. It's good to have that out there. And there's always the one of my favorites, the recording of the phone call I had with the two co-CEOs at one point, Adam Frank and Kirk Sampson. It's actually a player on ChuckStock.com if you want to go and listen to all this stuff. There's everything from humor and mock science commercials there to serious mock science stuff. And as far as mixed martial arts and boxing goes, we do have a lot to talk about in that regard. So we're going to get to that point first. Top to bottom, exactly, what as few words as possible, I guess, what exactly went down, why I'm even at this point where I'm going down there asking for money. But anyway, the big thing that we have to discuss is your boy, Tony, Hank Lundy.
Two of my good friends in action this weekend. One worked out pretty good, one not so good. But Rich, you were in attendance up at the Roxy this Friday night. This is my good friend, Raymond Hank Lundy, up in South Philadelphia.
You know who I could have had on the show tonight if you didn't hate him so much?
Who?
John Ruiz. Yeah, I shook his hand. He was hanging out with the Rocky people. He loves us now. He's going to come to our events.
Great. I mean,
But Pacquiao is one of those guys that you like to root for in most cases, and this just kind of stains a good guy, which is, I think, a lot worse. I mean, obviously, I've kind of got some experience in that realm, you know, getting stuff thrown at you when you didn't do anything wrong. It sucks, and, you know, just when the sport really needs a good role model, this guy's, you know, trying to run for Congress in his home country, and everybody loves him. He's a worldwide hero. He helps out the typhoon victims over there. Just a real good guy all around. And to have that month slung at him, I can understand why he would sue. And, and it does make it seem like Floyd is afraid. And he would throw all that stuff up there, not just to hide the fight, but to ruin it. And we don't know if that's true, but it'd be an interesting sideline if it was. Who knows? But, you know, obviously, hype, like I said before, it builds drama towards the fight, and it'll sell more tickets in the long run if they are squaring off in both legal and you know, promotional realms. But the big key is who's going to have the better fight. That's the next question that people should be moving on to. They're already stuck on the stuff that we don't even talk about until the legal case is over. I mean, that stuff is just going to be he said, she said until that's over. But you know, the real big question is who's going to have the better fight attendance and pay-per-view buys between these two when they have their next fights.
Yeah, the boxing is a funny sport. I mean, it's actually, I mean, a lot of sports are funny like this. I mean, you can really, really hype something up. I remember about a month and a half ago, the best possible matchup for the Super Bowl would have been the two teams that were undefeated at the time, that being the New Orleans Saints and the Indianapolis Colts.
How about Brett Favre throwing the interception?
Yeah, well, like, you know, how cool would that have been? Two undefeated teams going for it. And then it was then the Saints lost, then the Colts lost. And then it was like, well, you know, maybe Favre will get there. Or maybe the Jets and their rookie quarterback and their rookie head coach can make it. And then who's then the team? The Saints and the Colts. It was fun like that, but there was so many things that could happen. Now you get a situation, boy, man. Could this fight eventually happen and be even bigger with all these allegations? Absolutely. Maybe in September or through November, you know, this fight happens, you know, wherever, in a huge stadium, maybe the Texas Stadium, maybe the Superdome, maybe a huge casino venue, and they bring in millions of dollars and a huge, you know, 2 million plus pay-per-view buys and set all these records. Yeah. Joshua Klein could not have Manny Pacquiao, and for a year, they could potentially lose to Shane Mosley, and guess what? Then we don't have none of it.
It's a whole new freaking ballgame, don't
we? Yeah, the only sport you're going to see that really is guaranteed when it comes to things that are guaranteed like this
right.
is the big sport, professional wrestling. Because we got WrestleMania coming up, and the biggest match out there is going to be Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. Well, guess what? You know, Randy Macho Man Savage ain't stepping in and beating either one of the two. You're getting Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. That's what the tickets sell.
Yeah, well, that's worthy of a whole other show. Debate between the two of them. So what's going to happen is they're eventually in a fight, I think. I mean, there's no way those two retire without fighting each other.
If Pacquiao beats Karate and Mayweather beats Mosley, especially if puts them win convincingly, they're gonna, I mean, I don't know if they're gonna have to get lawyers together, mediators together, the Pope, the Dalai Lama, I don't know, the President of the United States, even if they want to get me involved, I'll be happy to sit down and negotiate,
right?
I will only make one rule. I'll sit there, I'll be the mediator. My only rule is that 14 and Roger are banned, where I smack the loose out of both of them, and their truthful snaps.
Whoa, this is stormy.
Anyway. Just talking shit now. Rich, before we started on this about 15 minutes ago talking about my good friend Hammer and Hank Lunch. Before we jump back to this, there was one thing I wanted to ask you from the other day, which I totally forgot about.
Okay.
Tell me about this book.
What book?
You write the book. I put something on Facebook with Rich Mick, Good News Reporter, and I said, yeah, I think you would. And you're the best co-host in the world, ha 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 ha. And he said, yeah, but the question is, am I going to be a good book writer?
Oh, yes.
And so we're going to find out soon, so talk to us.
Well, basically, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to make sure that no matter what happens with this case, I'm going to be able to write the book. And book is basically what I've been holding back, you know. I could be writing new articles every day on this thing, and there's so much stuff out there. And a lot of this stuff I'm going to keep online, but once I write the book about this whole Zions thing, you know, that it's been 2.5 years proven in the lawsuit that they can't sue me, you know, I'm telling the truth. They dismissed their case against me. Now, there's going to be no way that the company sues me. And, you know, the Fertittas, they've had plenty of reasons that they could have thrown at the wall to sue me in Nevada themselves already, hundreds of times, for some of the stuff that I put out there, and they haven't, so they're not going to either. And writing a book is not going to change it, and if it does, I know how to be my own lawyer now, and they know that. So writing a book is actually going to be the most gratifying process, because, number one, it's going to be stress-free. You know, it's going to give me something that I know it's not going to be dependent on how many clicks I get on my Google Ads and all that stuff. It's going to be a contract, and it's also going to be designed to help people recover some funds that this whole situation took away from them. So, if all goes well, and I go out there and they allow me to follow this case and work with these lawyers who are professionals at what they do, and I'm a professional at writing, and I can sit down and actually write the book following these guys. And then not only that, but I met this woman who's local, who does documentary work, and she's got some great cameras, and lives right down the street. She needs some legal help too, like anybody does. You know, who's gets stuck in a big case, and the lawyer's sucking them dry. And that's what they do. They don't get their reputation as lawyers in some of these cases because they're good people. And some of them are. I mean, actually, I've run across a few of them that actually do have some sense of, you know, serving the public good. But the best thing about all this is, you know, that there's nothing really that's been done like this as far as writing a book about somebody who's become their own lawyer and come this far through so many different courts and bankruptcies. And I don't think anybody ever in the history of mankind has ever been sued in 2 free states in the United States.
Yeah.
Or not sued, but involved in, you know, 2 litigations like this that involve 2 different prior restraints. I don't think that's ever happened. You know, only the internet could create a situation like that. And one of the things that I want to do is just, you know, basically just prove that the pen is mightier than the sword. And I'm already doing that online with I've already done that online pretty much with the Zions case, so that's going to be a book that's not only going to tell a story, but it's going to instruct people on how to do their own activism and, you know, lawyer approach themselves and learn how to be their own lawyer themselves. I wouldn't force it on anyone. I wouldn't ask anyone to try it themselves, knowing what I've gone through. But if it comes to that, you know, you have to. Go ahead and do it, you know. If you think you can do it, go ahead and do it and see where it takes you. But rambling here.
So, start working this book. Are you dedicating any content to the book of the Flight News Unlimited?
Oh, of course. You know.
Like a whole chapter.
Yes.
I want my picture in the book too.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll just, you know, we can always put a little section in there about how we've been talking about this on our show for years. And we both developed our own independent hatred for Dana White without keeping it together.
That's right.
I don't know. There's so much involved, and really nobody else is writing about it, if you think about it. Actually, if you look back, I have to go and obviously revamp ZionSucks.com, whether I win this case or whether I settle favorably to leaving everything online or not. You know, I want to go back and I want to revamp that because there's a lot of broken links. But if you go back and look at some of the other outfits that were covering this, like SureDog and MMAPayout.com, their old stories are gone. I mean, gone. You got sites like FightOpinion.com, which is super independent. It's got that Zach Arnold and the other guy who is an actual lawyer, I think, that was on that one time. They were talking about Zions Court in session. I got that video out. Those guys wrote about me, and it's still there. And then there's that other humor site, FightLinker.com. But a lot of the other sites, or at least that one, SureDog and MMA Payout, a lot of their old articles are gone. They took them off for some reason about this. So it kind of makes me wonder. what's going on? Because SureDog hates Dana White, too. He's the one that called their writer there a slur for a homosexual or whatever you call it. I don't know. But to make a long story short, this is controversial stuff. It's across the board, like real conspiracy theory. And I'm just really getting sick of people like this one guy on SureDog that really doesn't know much about me at all. I mean, a couple people. One guy was funny. He tried to, like, jump on the forum and say that I was just in the case. You know, and he's like one of those guys that's in Zuffa's pocket. And he gets on there and he says all this stuff about, you know, hey, you know, this looks like everything I've seen you've been denied in this case. And he's like, listen, you know, I got a $10 million counterclaim going forward. And it's, you know, I got a $150 million sanctions motion that's outstanding, too. And he, like, apologizes and said he was, you know, trying to screw with me. But it's just amazing how far it's come since it's like, even a movie. You watch a movie today, right? A blockbuster Hollywood movie is all about the hero overcoming obstacles to win out in the end.
Yep.
Every single movie. And there's a love interest. You know, you can't forget that. There's always a love interest. But,
well, of course.
And that's just, you know, it's a perfect novel situation, too, to write a novel about it if I have to, if I don't want to go nonfiction and get all the details absolutely correct. I can make it a novel based on true story. And, I don't know, it's just all about just getting the stress, really, and then being able to use that as a turning point, springboard for future things. You're not only to build Fight News Unlimited, but also to build something else off of SuckSite.com and that concept of, you know, taking it to the streets of the internet, really. You know, you can take it to the streets in public, too. I got a little trick up my sleeve for the Indianapolis situation. Just on the bus trip out there, so. we'll see what happens there, but I'm going to bring my camera and some stickers, and I'm going to be going to New York City, Philadelphia, and Indianapolis, so I might as well put some stickers up in some public places with all the website names on them. Really get the word out there, you know? What perfect place to go to than a bus station, you know, sort of sticker on the wall at a bus station. And, you know, people see that every day, they're going to remember that. But anyway, getting back to the boxing and the mixed martial arts.
Well, let's pick up where we started. So, Fights the Roxy.
Fights the Roxy were pretty good. I was actually kind of tasked with helping up the Rocky Marciano Foundation to sell some t-shirts, and they had a good, pretty good night. But I did get a chance to take some notes on all the fights. The only one that I really missed was the first one. Maceo Crowder won a pretty tough fight against a kid that had his pro debut. And you know, it was a pretty good fight, back a little bit back and forth. I didn't get to catch the whole thing. But Maceo won. He was a local kid, so everybody was happy about that. And then Brian Polish Prince Kielczewski went against the kid, Palacios was his last name. He was a real rugged, little short kid, short arms, but real stocky, real rugged. He had the face of a fighter, you know, a little Mexican guy. Just keep the bang real close, trying to pull his way inside. And he did fairly well, you know, keeping it competitive, but he just couldn't withstand the craftiness, I guess you'd call it, of Kielczewski. He just kept his distance for the most part. He had a short uppercut that he was using a lot that's kind of acted in a lot of situations, and he really used his jab well. And he actually stopped and talked to us before the fight, and he said, you know, I'm not going to try to knock this kid out. I'm going to try to box him. I heard he's pretty tough. And he had the perfect strategy going in against him. And a couple times, they were really fight of the night, and they were just slugging at each other like you wouldn't believe. It was probably one of the best fights I've seen at that level. You know, these guys didn't have more than a handful of fights between them. I think they each had about a half dozen fights, a little bit more than that, maybe 10 fights, less than 10 fights, both of them. It was good stuff. And then Chris Trietti, another kid from the same town as Kielczewski, Quincy, Mass, where I went to high school, got absolutely wiped out by Eddie Caminero. And, you know, it's one of those cases where the fighter's clearly outclassed, and he's complaining to the ref for stopping the fight. And literally, you know, it wasn't because of a knockdown or anything. The kid was stumbling around the ring. The ref stopped him, looked right into his eyes, and waved off the fight. And, you know, no better judge of what's going on than the referees right in there as to whether that guy should be continuing. And he was taking quite a beating, cut his eye open, his second round TKO. But I had the feeling that the kid felt like he was chipped. I don't think he should, you know. He should be thanking that guy. But anyway, he was like 8-1, so he's pretty pissed off. He doesn't want to have another second loss on his record, but he'll recover. Kevin Arrow, he just was the better fighter as far as throwing more punches and coming at him from awkward angles. It was another pretty good fight, but Kevin Arrow didn't have a great record, so he kind of was the sleeper winner there. I think Triadi expected to walk all over him. And, he just couldn't answer. He said everything. Nothing was particularly hard, but you know, it was just the onslaught of the attack. He just never stopped. So that was one of the only real big knockouts of the night. And then the main event was Hank Lundy versus Richard Abril, who was a Cuban all-star boxer at the amateur level. And he had defected to Miami. He came up here, all the way up here to Boston to fight from Philly. And he got ugly. Go figure. Abril actually at the press conference, it was kind of interesting. He went back and forth and kind of at a loss. I don't remember exactly what Abril was saying to Hank, but he was speaking Spanish, and a translator got up there and translated for him. But I do remember Hank saying to him, "Listen, come tomorrow, you know, when I'm done with you, you're going to be speaking English. So hard I'm going to hit you." And I don't think he really ever hurt Abril too badly. He stunned him a couple times, but Abril has got a real tough to hit face. You know, he's real good at blocking with one hand at all times. He moves very well. But both guys kept one hand almost the whole time. So they did each take quite a bit of big head shots. I think Abril was taking more shots just because he couldn't stay outside like he wanted to. His reach was much greater than Hank's. His game plan would have been to stay outside. But what Hank did was he baited him in with a little left hand. And he's got that style, kind of like Figueroa, or Gato Figueroa. He's had his own slow boating style, he called it. Well, Hank's got his own little style. And, you know, he does a lot of bobbing and weaving. He moves the upper body a lot, and he keeps on his toes. And he has kind of a biting uppercut that he throws, and awkward hooks. He throws a right and left hook a lot, and he lands it. But he doesn't want him to get frustrated either. He'll throw the jab when he's outside. He won't let the guy get his game on outside either. Even though I think Hank is a much better inside fighter. He can handle himself in both rounds, and he knows how to box. He boxed the shit out of Abril. And he took every round by the slightest margin he had to. He was a tactician up there. And I think, because Abril landed some hard right hands, he looked to have Hank hurt at a couple points. Made his thing that, hey, this guy won the fight, that knockdown was a 2-8 round, and he got chipped or whatever. But the thing was, Hank was smiling after almost every single hard hit. He was smiling at Abril. And at one point, Abril got so frustrated, he said something to Hank in the ring first. It wasn't Hank beating him. Abril said something to him. But it was late in the fight. And Hank squawked back something. I never heard what it was. But he must have said something in English. He's not going to speak Spanish to him. He knows some English, so he must have said something in English. Bitch or something. But it was interesting. It was a very close fight, and it closer than the one card. We had a 98-91, I believe it was. And the other two cards were separated by 2 points, one for Hank and one for Abril. And when I went up to the ring after the fight and went to shake Hank's hand, I actually met him at the press conference, said hi to him, and chit-chatted with him a little bit at the press conference for the fight. But this was just kind of random. I went down there after the fight. I shook his hand and I said, great job. And he had just gotten out of the ring. He was nice and relaxed. And somebody from the other guy's corner, whether it was his trainer or his father or whatever, he looked actually like his father or relative. He had a little gray hair, salt and pepper, wasn't too old to fight. He came up to Hank, almost grazed his face, and he kept pointing at him. And he said, "You I bet Frank, Hank was going to throw down right there, and he goes, let's fight right now, I'll fight you. And the guy keeps saying, you didn't win that fight. And he says, I'm from Philly, I'm going right now. And I'm standing right next to him as this is all happening. I just took a picture of him as he's walking around the ring, and I just shook his hand. So I'm thinking, there's going to be a fight right now, I'll throw down for Hank. He was representing Philly hardcore. To the fullest extent, not only in the ring, but outside. I'm sure you would have been proud to see him.
That's right. My boy Hank, Hank Frank's a good guy. I mean, he's the kid that, really keeps himself proud. He makes some laps in there. He makes little mistakes. But, I think he's still got a lot to learn, and he's got a very bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, he should have let a ring come in for a guy who's only lost was against Brandis Prescott, who knocked out by Aaron Cotton. That's pretty much considered one of the best pound-for-pound guys out there. He's only lost that one point there. That's pretty impressive. That's a big step up for Hank. And the fact that he was still able to control the pace at that level, despite the controversy, I think he did win that fight. There could be an argument that the guy that voted for Abreu was looking at a different point. Just as easily as you could say the guy that rules in 98 to 91 was out of his mind. So, I don't think you can take anything away from Hank for that performance. It's unfortunate to see things end like that. I just think, thankfully, I'm thankful that for Hank anyway, that it happened after a lot of the fans had already left. So they didn't have to see that. But, everybody was itching to watch it. I only had the first round. It was a matter of not having enough batteries left over and time on my memory card. But it would have been nice to have that whole fight on tape when we got the first round. Then we would kind of quell the debate. But really, Abreu's only problem was that he just did not want to expand beyond the 1-2s. And he couldn't find his range. And he was good at eliminating that range. He just changed the levels a lot. Bob didn't leave it. Just being crafty. He's just an all-around crafty guy when he gets in there. He uses every inch of the ring. He knows his distance very well. Some of his punches remind me a little of Pacquiao. Pacquiao throws punches. He's a little bit lighter. He's a light welterweight, but probably lighter than what Pacquiao's fighting lately, I guess. Maybe someday we'll see Hank fight Pacquiao if he keeps improving.
Right around that 135 to 140 range. Obviously, right now, hoping that he's going to like 141, 142, but right now, rather see him stay around the 135 range. Maybe go for a kind of lightweight than we got.
Yeah, we know he's not going to be fighting Ricky Hatton anytime soon.
Well, when's Ricky Hatton going to get himself back down in shape? Talking about fighting again, we gotta come down and wait. That's gonna catch up to you. After a while, your body's not gonna respond to it anymore.
Well, he's going to
the
super middleweight. Yeah. So he's not coming down this far.
Right.
Is that become official? Is he gonna join that tournament or what? I know we talked about that, but I don't know if that was a real story. It was kind of like so far-fetched. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I was curious. I read an article about it. Fight with David A.
That's going to be what, March or April or somewhere in the spring, right?
I got records on me here. I'll have to bring it up. They just signed today, I guess, or recently. April 3rd.
Yeah, I saw it online today.
April 3rd, looks like. Okay. At the MEN Arena in Manchester, England. And that's going to be kind of an interesting fight. I think David Haye is actually a better opponent for Ruiz than a lot of the other champions out there. And obviously we've seen him struggle against the big Russian giant. And David Haye outboxed that guy.
Right.
So, Ruiz, I don't know, he looks like he's in pretty decent shape. He looks very confident. But I think David Haye is younger and faster, so we'll have to see if Ruiz can keep up with him. But I would say the favorite has got to be David Haye in this one. But I would just count Ruiz out.
He's younger, he's faster, he's got a good 1-2. What Haye has to do is not let Ruiz get him on the ground, really. I mean, to be honest, the reason Ruiz was any close, like the mall, you know, clutch with one arm, hit with the other, you know, keep the fight at a very slow pace, which would obviously be Haye's speed advantages, and negate his power punches. But Haye's got to lose your box from the outside, fire the 1-2, get back on the angle, hit him again, and not let Ruiz fight it close.
Yep. And we'll see what happens there, but basically, I think that John is, he's still obviously convinced he's got something left. And, this is going to be his opportunity to really prove that, it's in his mind, I'm sure he believes he's earned this. If he works hard enough to prove it, he's aiming to really show everybody that that's the truth. You know, he's at that level still to this day. We'll see if he's up for the challenge, but he certainly looks like he's not taking any days off from training. I don't know whether the reach is all that different, but it might all depend on how these guys go toe-to-toe with each other, because that might really make it a good fight, just watching these guys go toe-to-toe if they decide to do that. I know that being the guy with such a great, a huge record with so many fights, so much experience, Ruiz is probably going to be the guy that tries to box and take advantage of his young eagerness and catch him coming in with a counter punch or something. But it's going to be a real heavyweight fight. You know, it's not going to be like a Klitschko versus somebody that can't hit him in the knee. So I think it's going to be exciting. And it's a chance for another American heavyweight champion. It's not the last line of defense. It's a chance. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. But as far as mixed martial arts, I don't know. Check that out. I'm on BoxRec right now. Guess what? Me with Rocky Reynolds. Pled not guilty to assault. Did you know that?
He pled not guilty?
Yeah. What a guy. We talked about last week, I know Brock Lesnar being back. That's been circulating through the news like a wildfire. I wish he would come out there. I mean, obviously he probably can't, but I wish he would come out there and, like, call Dana White a punk for saying all that crap. It would be nice. The perfect world, you know, instead of that. He had that bad experience of speaking out about management a little too early and putting this place down.
You know, big sports artist, he's one of my favorites, is scheduled to fight this weekend.
Who's that? Butterbean?
Oh. Wes Sims.
Wes Sims, oh, your boy. He's fighting Bobby Lashley, right?
Yeah.
After he goes to the strip club.
Got a guy, Brent says, I think, something like 22 or 12. He's got, 30-plus fights. 25 last week, he said 4.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned that, but I don't know if you've been reading up. The mixed martial arts links that I put out every now and then, I actually read some of the stories. But I don't know if I've read any of these, but I do know there's been a lot of headlines out there in those mixed martial arts links every day about how Bobby Lashley's really getting the bumps. You know, they're lining up bumps for this guy. Like you're trying to market him almost like Kimbo was marketing him.
I think Bobby Lashley is a better athlete than Kimbo. I mean, the guy is, he was an amateur wrestling standout.
I don't know his history, but
he was in the Army. He was like an Army sergeant. And I know he was an athlete, you know, before he broke into the field of professional wrestling. And this went into mixed martial arts. Look at something real quick. But I know he's definitely a qualified athlete.
Right.
I don't know what his prior experiences are. I mean, Brock Lesnar, you know, he had, NCAA, like, two-time champion, and then he tried to break into NFL football, so he was definitely a great athlete.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I don't think he has any physical problems. Obviously, he's doing two different sports. He's doing wrestling, sports entertainment. But he's doing wrestling, and he's doing mixed martial arts back and forth in all issues, so he doesn't have any major knee problems like people. And he's, I think he's a little bit more exciting. But at the same time, he's a big marketing thing, you know, because obviously he's almost advertising for when he's wrestling, because, you know, the commentators are going to talk about the fact that he does MMA, too. And, you know, they're gonna get more famous for the fact that he is going back and forth.
Here's what I say. Listen to this, Rich. I pulled up his Wikipedia page. Lashley attended Missouri Valley College, where he won 3 national amateur wrestling championships in 1996 and 1998, placed fourth in 1995. Then in 1997 and 1998, he was the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletes Wrestling Champion. He joined the U.S. Army, where he continued to wrestle. Training for the Olympics, 2004 Olympics, when he suffered a knee injury. He suffered a knee injury while he was at a bank doing business and a robbery broke out. That sucks.
Nice. I hope he took out the felon. That's how he got it. But, it could be interesting to see if they're willing to step up his competition. Somebody big, like a Brett Rogers would be nice, you know, if they put them two together. We'll see a real good fight there, I think. But I think part of the reason why they're doing this, you know, throwing these big gifts his way is because he is a two-sport guy. You know, he doesn't want to take risks that are going to keep him out of the performance aspect of it. You know, he doesn't want a freaking smashed up face when he has to pin some guy in a big title match. Who's going to believe that? But, I don't know, it's just interesting to me. Everybody's talking about it, and it's out there. And actually, his opponent was changed. He was supposed to fight somebody else, and then Wes Sims stepped in. But Wes does have a boatload more experience on him than his
Lashley has 4 fights. He's 4-0. He has a non-champion position. Now, Wes Sims, and I'm going to pull up Sims' record, and like I said, Sims has had 37 fights. He's got 22 wins, 9 by knockout, 11 by submission, so 12 losses, a draw, and 2 no contests. He fought, you know, a lot of, big-time guys. You know, he fought Frank Mir on twice. One time, I mean, he got disqualified for grabbing the cage and kicking Mir in the head. Then the second time, Mir knocked him out. What we know about Sims is, he's on a 3-fight win streak. So, he was on a 3-fight loss streak.
Yeah, it's interesting. But you keep coming up with this stuff, Tony. We're going to have to call you the Rain Man of MMA, too.
What?
You keep coming up with these spot-on references here.
I want to pre-win those questions that I need to level. All term 2008 that did not count his appearance on the UFC show.
Okay. Those don't count anyway. Those are Mr. Manchin fights.
Right.
But, yeah, Wes Sims is a funny guy. He was actually pretty, he was actually more likable on the show than he was on our radio interview.
Yeah, true. I'm reading about him on the Ultimate Fighter, and, was seen as like, you know, one of the bullies, and it's constantly like, and here's what I'm saying, right on Wikipedia page. He's regularly on the TV episodes that earned a reputation for being one of the bullies of the household due to his constant childlike tauntings of Matt, Mitrione and Zach Jensen.
Mitrione.
Which are the same thing, like I said, you know, when he did our show 2 years ago. It was like dealing with a big child on the phone with us.
Right. Yeah, he was funny. There was this one guy who was real pissed about something, and he was like sulking off in the corner or something. And so, Wesley was dressed up for the karate gear, and all right, and he goes sneaking around the palm trees behind the pool, and the basketball court where the guy's shooting shots, trying to sneak up and scare him. It's probably one of the best moments in the show. It's kind of funny. You got almost all the way up there, so I'm not the guy who didn't even know he was there. You know, you made a good video. The Strikeforce card is pretty exciting, other than, you know, the whole debate there with Bobby Lashley and Wes Sims. Except Robbie Lawler back in action. He's pretty vicious with his hands. He can get proud with his boxing. Jay Heron versus Joe Riggs is also on that card. He had Herschel Walker stepping up and taking his passion for martial arts to a new level, fighting in the MMA. And he's fighting a guy that's relatively unknown, Greg Maggie. Don't know a thing about him. Doesn't look like they have a picture of him on SureDoc. He's got a 1-1 record with one TKO, one decision. And the style is freestyle. Which means you might see a lot of wrestling out of them. But anyway, that's pretty much all that's out there about this guy. And I'm thinking Herschel's got a pretty good shot at winning this one. You know, they're not going to put him up against some world beater the first time out of the gate. The main events are actually even more interesting than Herschel's fight. It's kind of getting a little too much attention, too, kind of like Bobby Lashley. Being called the overrated Herschel is already getting put out there as the next great superstar before he's done anything. So there's something to complain about that, too. The main event here shouldn't be overshadowed. We have Nick Diaz versus Marius Zaromskis. Nick Diaz, obviously from UFC fame, been there, done that. He moved on to a new organization with Elite XC. Did all right with them. Had a couple tough losses. Came out looking like a jackass with some of the things he did after those fights, but he's got a 20-7 record with 11 TKOs, 6 submissions, and 3 decisions, and a couple losses by TKO with 5 decisions losses. And he fights out of Stockton, California with his brother Nate Diaz. I think Nate just had a tough fight himself, but his last win was over Scott Smith. Nate Diaz, last win. And we all know what Scott Smith did to Crumley recently, not too long ago there. And Frank Shamrock, he beat the ever-living crap out of back on the 11th of April, 2009, which was one of the best fights I've ever seen Nick in. And actually, what impressed me more than anything was the fact that he had enough respect for Frank after the fact when he knocked him out to go over there and pulled him to his feet and yelled in his ear for him to get up and, you know, finish on his feet. Which, you know, I don't think Frank appreciated at the time, but maybe looking back he does. He kind of wanted to rest his head there for a little while. while. I think it was beaten here last night. Actually, I don't think I remember seeing the Nick Diaz versus Scott Smith fight. The one by submission, rear naked choke. I might have missed that one. That was 6-6-2009. That was his last fight. Zaromski. Zaromskis is 13-3-0 with 10 TKOs in the team. That's pretty good. One submission, one decision, and one other, whatever that is. One other. He looks like a pretty tough guy. Anyway, that about does it for that card. There's also a few other things going on. AFL Rumble at the Rock 2 going on at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida. We have some stuff going on with Netherlands. I don't even want to try to pronounce the meeting names, but it's going on Saturday. Saturday's the 30th, right?
Saturday's the 30th.
We have Onslaught fights going on Saturday in Winchester, Virginia at the Sportsplex Indoor Sports and Event Center. And we have Strikeforce Miami, we just mentioned that. We have MMA Berlin in Berlin, Germany. Tournament 19. Nitro Fighting Championships going on in Brazil. If you're near there at this weekend. Okinawa, would you like to go to Okinawa? Sayonara? King of the Cage is actually in Okinawa. That's the first. I don't think I've ever seen that anywhere. Talk about the UFC expanding with their deal with the Sheikh in the Abu Dhabi government. King of the Cage came into Okinawa. That would be new to me. I don't know if that's ever happened before. That's interesting. We have a lot of American and other European names on this card. Couple Japanese guys, Toby Yamada and Kichi Kunimoto. Everybody else is like Polish, European, or American. It's a big surprise. We'll see how that goes. I'll have to look for some reports on that after the fact, see how that went down. Because I don't know about Japan. Obviously, the UFC has big issues with Japan because of the way the bribe deal. This Abu Dhabi deal the UFC has done is supposedly supposed to help open the Chinese market. It's one of the big things that they want to do. Maybe these other organizations are starting to see that and say, well, maybe we need to get into Japan. Because I think Japan, obviously they think they're wrestling way more seriously than we do. And they have a lot of people over there that do like to fight sports and martial arts. Mixed martial arts is a whole different ballgame over there. There's different rules. Soccer kicks to the head. It's brains in most cases. Like I said, there was that one fight that we were talking about last week where the guy was ripping the guy's arm off the ropes from the outside. There's like a whole crew of Japanese guys ripping the guy's arm off the ropes so he can't hold. Has that happened in a boxing match?
I remember when Larry Holmes fought Ray Mercer back in like 92, and Mercer was obviously the aggressive fighter. Holmes was in his 40s, and while Mercer was trying to get too close, Holmes would grab the top rope, and he would like jab, and then the referee allowed him to jump in to warn him, which would give Holmes, a little bit of extra breathing seconds in there, and then, Mercer was getting leery every time Holmes would grab the rope, and it was a technique to keep him at bay. That was my main man, Mitch Paz. Like, later in his career, he would grab the ropes and use it for leverage to throw a hook, but then other times he would use it to buy himself a breather.
Yeah, Vinny, I saw Vinny at the show on last Friday, too, when he was there.
Yeah, Vinny be there.
Some real tall black guy comes up to me and he goes, "Who's that movie star guy out there? I know he looks familiar." That's Vinny Paz right there. Speaking of the devil, the Paz, yes, Canadian devil.
Exactly, the devil.
But, getting off track here, there's a few other mixed martial arts things going on, too. Probably worth watching if you're in your area. here in Waikiki, Hawaii, from Destiny MMA on Saturday at the Level 4 nightclub. In London, England's got some stuff going on at the Kentish Town Forum, Fight Night Heavyweight Collide, also on Saturday. The WFC Super Brawl is going on in West Allis, Wisconsin, at the Wisconsin State Fair Park. And another Japanese event going on Sunday, Rough Stone's Second Ring at the Caesar Gym Shinkoiwa in Katsushika, Tokyo. How's that for a pronouncement?
Yeah.
Now it's time for boxing. We go to the fights.
You know, we talked, you know, I know you had a chance to talk about, you know, the fight card you went to last week, and my friend Hammer Hanglund, you know, got a very, very big win over an incredible opponent. But I said that we've been on the air tonight, you know, I had two fighters fighting last weekend. One had a good outing, one had a not so good outing. So I wanted to go to the HBO card that was on last Saturday night. And in the main event was Juan Manuel Lopez coming back off his shaky performance, fighting Steven Zaremino. And that was pretty good. Two southpaws, and they gave a pretty good performance. And out of nowhere, you know, you could tell, like, Lopez was winning the fight, but Zaremino was right there. And out of nowhere, he hit him with a right uppercut, and then, like a left hook, or a left hand, right hook, and dropped him in the corner, and that was it. And, you know, Zaremino, they stopped the fight right there. Lopez won his fight. The first fight of the night was Uriokas Gamboa, the sensational Cuban fighter, fighting my good friend Rogers Matagua. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, hey, you know, Matagua had given Lopez a hell of a fight when they fought back in October, and they were seeing, you know, if he could possibly train for Lopez. The one thing, and I was talking to my dad before the fight, and he was like, man, he was worried about, and I was making that upset incorrectly earlier, if you could do the same to Gamboa. And what my dad was worried about was Gamboa's phenomenal speed. And what had happened there, I think Rogers was trying so hard, you know, to not get caught, that he let himself get caught. When he was going in there, he was kind of like lurching forward and throwing single punches. And then Gamboa was just staying on the outside and timing him. And, I mean, it's hard to think of hindsight's 2020, and I was talking to my friend Simon Carr afterwards, who went up to Madison Square Garden for the fight. And he's like, man, it's so frustrating, you know, when you're cheering for a guy and he's not doing what he's told to do. And I was thinking that the game plan for Rogers was to keep his punches short and keep the first few rounds, you know, slow-paced. And then, you know, try to get Gamboa into the middle to later rounds, and then that's when, you know, Rogers turns into, like, you know, Rocky. And he didn't let that happen. He was lurching forward, throwing single jabs, and Gamboa was just timing him with right hands and left hooks. And he caught him in the first round, and he caught him with a flash knockdown. And he stunned him in the second. Then at one point, Rogers threw a jab, and Gamboa was so fast. Gamboa threw about five counter punches before Rogers even got his jab hand back. And that was, yeah, I mean, he threw a jab, and Gamboa stepped in. I was like, right, left hook, right. And put him down. I was like, God, dude, this shit in slow motion. And it was even fast in slow motion. And my dad was really upset about it. He really likes Rogers a lot. Rogers is a big guy. We've known him for about 10 years. And I turned to him, I said, and my dad was really upset about the fight. I'm like, oh, I can't bad that. He might have lost the fight, but, I mean, thankfully he didn't get hurt. His name is Kapane. This is a guy that when he came to America 10 years ago, they said he was basically penniless. I mean, he had nothing. And now he's, you know, he's learned the English language. He's made it, you know, a decent amount of money as a pro fighter when the odds were against him. I mean, it's sad that, you know, he didn't win the world title, and it's, you know, sad that he got beaten like that, but, you know, he came, you know, he fought as hard as he could, and he just lost to a better fighter.
You win some, you lose some.
You win some, you lose some, and I mean, there's no shame in fighting on, you know, HBO and fighting one of the greatest fighters in the sport today, one of the top prospects out there. I mean, the guy's done he worked a lot better fighters more impressively.
Yeah, I'm proud to say that the guy that cracked my rib or broke it out, I never got an x-ray, so I don't know for sure, but he fucked up. The guy that did that went past the first round of the Golden Gloves, you know? So
yeah.
That's something, and I'm sure Rogers is always going to be able to brag about fighting Gamboa when Gamboa does get to a world championship level, which is almost a foregone.
That fight was a world title fight. Gamboa was the defending champion coming in.
Oh, well, undisputed. Let's say undisputed champion status. Even so, I mean, Rogers has got a lot to brag about that he hung with him that long. He's a vicious fighter.
And he probably gave one of my love Lopez to the nail fight, you know, 12 rounds. That was a war. So, hey, he fought for world title twice, and, you know, he came out there, he did four of all sold out every time. I mean, like I said, he can't win them all, and, you know, there are like, a lot of guys that have done themselves a, you know, a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think boxers... Naturally, they want to stay in, they want to get every win they can and all that, you know. But at some point, you know, every boxer needs to realize, hey, you know, that guy's at a world-class level, and he's going to be champion, and I can try, but it's going to be a miracle for me. So, you know, the sooner they realize that, if they're that type of person, you know, not to discourage anybody from trying to be champion, and anything can happen. But in a lot of situations, you just got to know whether you have it or not. You know, some people got it, some people don't. And it's for some people, it just is not going to change. You know, you either got what it takes or you don't. And, you know, for some, it's all about timing. For others, it's all about dedication. And, you know.
Well, of course, the way Max Kellerman was kind of doing the show, and he was talking about Rogers fighting back in October against one of the Lopez. And, you know, he says, you get a fighter, it's like, have you ever heard of this before? Fighter from Philadelphia with more than 10 losses on his record, stepping up to fight the undefeated champion, losing early, stages a late comeback, and changing on the verdict of the bell, and loses a close decision. Except this wasn't Rocky, it was real life. more than anything, you can always, you know, be, this guy got the press. In the Ring magazine, the Bible of Boxing, with an article that says the pants are kneeing Rocky. You can never take that away from him. You can never take away the fact that he was a runner up for fight of the year two years in a row. So, I mean, you take the good with the bad. I mean, sometimes you see a lot of these great undefeated fighters, you know, when they retire, they're like, man, my career could have been so much better.
Right, nobody's
going to be. Maybe Flip Bayless might be saying that 10, 15 years from now. I think I regret because, you know, I never got the respect that I thought I deserved or I could have earned it. I never got the admiration from fans that I thought I could have earned.
I think it's always better if you're going to get outclassed like this kid Trietti there in Boston. If you're going to get beat, it's always better to, you know, have it be done quick. You know, quick and painless. Because, you know, you get a guy like Cotto, who goes out on a shield, he gets his ass kicked all the way across the ring, and it just makes you feel bad for the guy.
Is that true?
A guy like Gamboa going in there and knocking Batagua out like that, you know, at least you know that this guy's going to get up and he's going to continue. He's, it's just a got caught. It's one of those things.
You look at it this way, Rich, talking about, you know, some players. And I'm only going to mention his name again because I just did. He's not like Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd is having a controversy. It's a fight to retire right now. Okay, he's come up. Okay, this is bullshit. I'm tired. I don't want to do this no more. He's the head of boxing. I've got a lot of money. I can do little appearances of professional wrestling and whatever. And then, like, 10, 15 years down the road, he's like, man, what if I want to fall down? You know, what if? Then, on the flip side, you take a fighter like Mickey Ward, never won a world title. But he's been in the place 2 years, 3 years in a row, and he's got a lot of accolades and a lot of popularity just because he was an ever-safe guy. Now they're being, you know, pound-for-pound best in the world that a lot of people hate and a lot of people, you know, are criticizing. Or fighter that was, you know, mediocre, you know, kind of a club fighter, you know, never a world champion, but was just undeniably popular and fight this year 3 years in a row.
But, anyway, we got a whole slate of cards to talk about coming up this week. It's not only a big week for mixed martial arts, as we just heard, but it's a huge week for boxing. Starting tomorrow night, we have some decent matchups down here in Connecticut, my neck of the woods, at the Mohegan Sun Casino. Tomorrow night, TKO Boxing Promotions is putting on a little show with Peter Manfredo Jr. headlining against Matt Vanda. And Manfredo Jr. is 33-6 with 18 knockouts at super middleweight, and Vanda is 42-9 with 22 knockouts. So that'll be a good show there. And I've been following since his beginning days with Jackie Callan. I don't think he's with her anymore, but Matt Remillard, who's also in action on featherweight level. He's 20-0 now with 11 knockouts, and he's fighting Rafael Awara, who's 11-1 with 5 knockouts. So it should be a pretty good show, and looks like there's a female fight on the card. Adelita Irizarry versus Rachel Clark. Irizarry is 6-3, Clark is 4-3 with one draw. That's at welterweight, 6-rounder. Edwin Rodriguez, La Bomba, is in action there. He's also undefeated, 13-0 with 9 knockouts. And he's fighting Tyson, Byron Tyson, 9-1. That's about it, worth mentioning there. Then we go down to Las Vegas, west to Las Vegas, for a rematch between Gabriel Campillo, how you pronounce that? You should know, you're Italian. Is that an Italian name? Campillo?
Sure. That might be fascinating.
Oh, maybe. He's fighting Beboot Shumanov. This is a rematch off their last fight. And Campillo won. It was kind of a controversial majority decision in that fight, separated by a couple points here and there. So they've agreed to have a rematch. That last one was in Beboot's hometown that he lost, Kazakhstan. And now it's going to be this one, looks like. Let's see, this one is going to be in Las Vegas, like I said. So, also on this card, it's light middleweight. That's that fight is light heavyweight, by the way. And Shumanov is 8-1. Campillo is 19-2. We also have a light middleweight fight between contender Grady Brewer, 26-11, and Arislandi Lara, who's 9-0. So we'll see if Grady Brewer still got it. And another contender is fighting in Nevada on Friday in Reno, Nevada. Trying to steal some thunder from Vegas with the boxing here. We have Jesse Brinkley versus Curtis Stevens. And this is Let's Get It On Promotions involved in this with Terry and Tommy Lane and also Star Boxing. Stuck their neck out for this one. This is going to be the one that's going to be on ESPN2 as well for Fighting New Fights this week. Jesse Brinkley versus Curtis Showtime Stevens, is that the one? Or?
Yeah, so much respect. I don't have all my interrupt anymore, but I don't think they just are. The child is going to be Brinkley's a tough kid. He's not going to strip out his kick. He's going to be down there. They're fighting in the air. Or whatever you said about last year. He's a, he's a guy, Curtis Stevens is a lot of trouble. If he gets hard, he's strong. You never know.
Stevens' only two losses are to Marcos Primera. He immediately rematched and beat by unanimous decision after he got TKO in the eighth round. And Andre Durrell, which happened in 2007, that was his last loss. And that was a unanimous decision after 10, also in Mohegan Sun, we just talked about. This one's going to be in the Reno. That'll be on Friday Night Fights on ESPN.
Nice.
And we've got Raymond Serrano, 11-0, versus Ronnie Warrior Jr., 13-2. Welterweight for a co-main event. His green name for a boxer, Ronnie Warrior. Johnny Warrior would be the only better one. Joe Warrior, how about that? And we go to, this fight going on in Chicago, even. Nothing really huge on that card, but there's a heck of a lot of fights. Mostly 4 and 8 rounders. Let's see, we've got to go to Saturday for the next group of fights. You know you're going to be in Denmark Saturday, right?
Yeah.
You get to see Lalenga Mock versus Giovanni Kikaralis. Mock is a super middleweight with a 28-12 record, 1 draw, 12 knockouts, versus Kikaralis is 11-2. And the next one on here is a little bit more interesting. We got Mads Larsen at super middleweight, 51-2 with 38 knockouts, versus Brian McGee, 32-3 with 22 knockouts. And this is for, drum roll please, the vacant EBU super middleweight title. Actually, I don't think it's a bad title. EBU is a pretty big organization. European and American boxing is so different these days. You know, it's quite a challenge to beat all the other contenders in Europe. Even though I'm sure they don't include everybody in Europe. They probably discriminate somewhere or another. Also in action this week, we have on Saturday down in Distrito Federal, Mexico City, we have Jorge Arce fighting Enki Engkada. Vacant Abilo super flyweight title on the line. 52-6-1 is Arce's record with 40 knockouts. And Engkada is 23-4 with 14 knockouts. I've never heard of him, but he's got quite the win streak going. At least his last 5 fights he won. So let's see who he's fought and see if any big names pop out. See who else is on that card as well. Jackie Nava, featherweight female fighter, 23-2. That's an unheard of record for a female fighter, especially with that lightweight class. She's got 10 knockouts, 2 draws. She's fighting Chantel Martinez, who's 8-3 with only 1 knockout, and has been knocked out once herself. Also, Eduardo Escobedo is on that card, 26-3 with 19 knockouts, fighting Joxan Hernandez, who's 17-1 with 10 knockouts. Miguel Angel Garcia is fighting a featherweight 8-rounder, and he's 18-0 with 15 knockouts, and he's fighting Arturo Gomez, who's 15-13. That's a pretty good card for Mexico. So in Mexico, we have the mismatch of the week this week. It's flat out obvious. This is a bad one. Well, it's the main event, too. The minimum weight, 12 rounds. I think this guy's going to last 12 rounds. Sammy Gutierrez. For a title, too. This is bad. Sammy Gutierrez is going to get paid big money to take a dive to the mobs for the odds on this one. No. He's fighting at minimum weight here for... maximum minimum weight title, and it's he's got a record of 22-5-2 with 13 knockouts, Gutierrez, and he's fighting a guy, good old Sammy Reyes, who is 2-4, and has been knocked out twice, but both of his wins come by way of knockout, so he's definitely got a puncher's chance, but not much of one. Wow. Still, they must not have mismatch laws down there in Mexico. But anyway, I was going to say Enki Engkada. I'm going to take a look at his record, fighting Jorge Arce. See if he's got any big name on his card, on his record. I don't see anybody too recognizable right off the bat. He fought another Gamboa and won. Joma Gamboa. 33-9 with two draws. He beat, that's the best record on this card. Except actually, fight after his debut. Talk about a mismatch. He has his debut, this Encarta in Jakarta, Indonesia. His next fight after his debut, 2 months after he wins by knockout in the sixth round of his debut, he fights a guy, Muhammad Rahman, who is 39-5-2 at that point, from Indonesia, Rahman was. Do you believe that? How about that? That sucks. His manager must have hated him. That's rough. Second fight, fighting a guy with 39 wins. That's ridiculous. That's like putting a 5-year-old in with Mike Tyson.
Out there. I might do something a lot of fun. It's a chance for me to go back to my alma mater
got a friend of mine who goes to Las Vegas. I'm here to talk to her. I still have some friends in the area that grew up in the Las Vegas area.
Well, I have to do a video myself.
I think you sprained your ankle on purpose just so you didn't have to do a YouTube video.
I have to get a video myself of working out my new sauna suit. I have been slacking off so hard the last few weeks, I haven't even done a run. But definitely going to get back to that very shortly. At least once before I go on my trip. Maybe twice. Just to do it and get it out of the way. But I've been kind of waiting for all the snow to melt. Finally, we had a bunch of rain. All the snow's gone. So I got no season left. I have about a month, 2 months, actually, since I got this freaking suit that I've been supposed to have taken a video to promote this thing that they gave me for free. You know, I probably, I don't know, they haven't asked about it, but they're probably wondering what the hell's going on. So I was trying to actually get it done before the snow was all gone, because that would be cool, you know, really show how well this honesty works.
Yeah.
You're sweating in the snow. But maybe just a little dusting we'll have to do, because that's what we got right now. And I'll get that done. I'll definitely get back up there. I mean, it was actually encouraging seeing that this kid that beat me pretty good. I mean, didn't actually hit me that hard in the face. And I hung in with him, but he definitely broke my rib. He went past the first round in his golden gloves. I haven't heard how he did this past Friday, but he was there this past Friday in the next round. I'm betting he won. He's a tough kid. And that kind of encourages me, even if I don't ever go pro, you know, that I can help somebody like that get to the next level. That's cool. So maybe I'll do a little bit more of that. Looks like with all the stuff going on in the legal realm, my brain is going to be needed in the future. I don't know if I'm going to hang in and do the 10 fights that I was hoping for, but it would be nice to get like 3 or 4, maybe even 5 pro fights, just to say I did it, like I've been saying. And we'll definitely see if I can get the pro debut out of the way by the end of this year. It'll definitely help have a little extra money around. How much, I won't know until next Thursday, so it's definitely going to be in the six-figure range if I'm able to persuade them like I think I would be able to. But anyway, I wanted to do a rewind, like I said earlier, and cover this one hearing. To put in context, there was a guy on some podunk site that I don't even think you can find it if you tried to on a search engine today. But for some reason, you know, I had some hearings that were recorded by another individual who was on the phone with me, who was planning to do a documentary on the whole science thing. Wanted to listen to a court hearing, so he recorded it, and he sent me the recordings, and I had them sent to this other guy who did a big interview with me. He sent me some questions while I'm doing an interview, and his name was Donald McGinnis. He was literally from overseas somewhere, like Ireland or Scotland or something, and he put this little website report together on my interview, and he included these links to these recordings of the court hearings that the other guy had made, and of course, the lawyer for the other side sees an opportunity to bring me in front of the judge and screw me up. So they call what's called a show cause hearing. And if you're not familiar with the legal realm, show cause is how it sounds. You know, you need to show a cause for something to be done about this activity. You know, because technically it's supposed to be illegal for you to distribute unofficial court hearings, recordings. You know, which at the time I didn't even know. Anyway, make a long story short, we had this hearing. Their lawyer gets the opportunity to present himself first, and I get their opportunity to present myself. And it's one of the best examples of my passion for the whole subject, because at one point I really, you know, like my voice almost breaks. I go off. And I put the lawyer, brought this motion on the defensive, and then I turn on the judge. And it kind of chills my blood listening to it myself when I get to the judge. You never go after the judge, and you certainly pay for it if you do, you know, because the judge is used to getting his own way, but this judge is, like, wishing he wasn't there that day. You can tell. You know, he's just, like, trying to move on to the next case when I start asking him a question. And I ask him a question, he doesn't answer, and I go, "Your Honor, I asked you a question." Oh, that's great stuff, but, you know, it was kind of funny. I talked to the woman who might be helping out with a documentary there. always talk about, hey, you know, I put up that picture there, all the girls are going to flock to the site for the looks. Well, she's trying to get George Clooney, she said, to play me. It's her movie. And I was like, no, I don't think so. He's a little too old for me, but it's flattering. Well, it would be a great courtroom speech scene. You know, I think it'd be almost on par with the, you want me on that wall, you know, handle the truth speech. Not quite as involved with national security, but it's pretty good. And rather than talk away here, let's just listen to us about 20 minutes long, so we'll have just a few minutes to wrap up at the end and talk about basically what I'm going down to Illinois to get accomplished and, you know, what's ahead there. Next week, I don't think there'll be a situation where they're going to prevent me from going out and talking about it. They obviously know they can't sue me for it, so why bother trying to stop me? But just in case, let's do it.
Before you start the intro, some news to report that I almost forgot.
Sure, go ahead.
As of February 15th of 2010, I'm going to be back to work for our place.
Nice.
We had our talk last Thursday, and I was going in on Friday. We both started. Well, I got a new address. Gave me the start date, and actually, you wanted me to start earlier, and I was like, no, I got other commitments I got to take care of. He's like, yeah, he was cool with it. He's like, no, I'm going to have February 15th. He just, you start earlier? I'm like, no. I said, I got other commitments, and I'm going to honor them. I'm going to get all you guys to me. The latest thing you should do is, like, try to screw me out of these other commitments I already scheduled.
Right. Well, I thought you were going to ask me for Philly cheesesteak in a couple days.
Yeah.
Further ado, here's September 10th, 2008, almost 2 years ago. Pretty good hearing here.
Something I would be proud to tell my friends about how I'm going home.
know, a language on the back of the attorney that this didn't roll that way, could be perceived after a situation that might be that doesn't belong here. We have a real problem we need to deal with before it becomes a blatant appeal of the situation. Your Honor, I break the truth, and I stand to the truth. My work is a lousy, and I have a pro se attorney, once they are refusing to do more than just write the tale of what happened to him. I feel like I can do more, and I must do more. This whole process has to be fully captured in this week's judge. I will write a book about this experience today, and a documentary of my story and my fight will be made. No matter how much it takes, put the call out to the appropriate finish point. And I must go do that, all that to report what happened, simply out of spite or revenge or desire to make some great profit. It'll be the principle of the whole thing, Your Honor. I am not a malicious person. It's not about me wanting to see God suffer as a business entity or wanting to see Virginia Enterprise suffer. It was about educating the public for me, letting them in on a big secret. I stepped in also. Scumbags were trying to steal the company right off the of the people who built it. And I tried to stop it by educating the masses. If this court thinks a person who does a good deed deserves to be punished, then this is what happens actually. Put me in the penalty box and it's pretty easy game today, but be prepared to be a fighting line there. Whatever it takes, Your Honor, I will find justice. And that's what keeps me going.
Mr. Bergeron, with respect to the recording on May 14th, it's your representation that you stopped the recording, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Can you, I know that that's in your response. To verify your response, do you have an affidavit of benefit?
Your Honor, I'm a bit confused about that because affidavits seem to be redundant.
Representation that it was some unidentified individual.
against my client, dismiss my client from the actions he's brought against us, or judicial immunity is what he's seeking. And he's seeking to abuse this proceeding in a protected forum so that he can make statements and engage in conduct that he's otherwise not allowed to do. Particularly from a party that's neither a creditor nor a shareholder. Now, I briefed the motion to disqualify you. I have nothing further to add other than this argument appears to be you haven't ruled my way, and as such, you're biased. Mr. Bergeron's argument isn't compelling. It has no evidentiary basis, and in fact, he's acknowledged that he was in possession of the recording.
Yes, Your Honor, I just have a limited comment to make. In light of the history of this case, I think it would be helpful to make sure that there is not anyone else on the telephone right now who is recording these proceedings, and that Mr. Bergeron is not in fact recording these proceedings now.
That's fair. Mr. Bergeron, you get a chance to respond to the comments, but I would first ask you
quickly with the decisions, and he hasn't been really at all in favor of the other side of the Senate. I don't think he had made any really big moves that were at least not in some way favorable to me since then. The one major thing that I lost on was something that I was a little bit confused on, and was when I was told to rewrite my counterclaim. And I could only claim defamation according to the judge. Now, that just meant that I couldn't claim all the other things that I tried to claim, but if there was another charge that I could come up with, I could have claimed it then. But I took it as meaning I could only file for defamation. So I had to put two and two together and figure out, well, how did these other guys defame me? And I came up with the Deal article. I noticed there was a portion of the Deal article that was written in a small New York City magazine about major moving and shaking on Wall Street and all kinds of bank deals and stuff. They did a story on the Zions case. The lady interviewed me for over an hour and gave me like two sentences in the whole piece. But so there was a quote by the other lawyer, Garman, who's actually been quoted already in the face of what the trustees put out there. The trustee put out about 50 different complaints, and one of them really hammers the Teen Enterprises for their role in the Zions bankruptcy. So basically, you know, it's out there. They've done this, and Garman is always the mouthpiece. He comes out there and he says whatever he has to say to make things right, and he makes it look like, you know, they're being already, you know, he's the big public face of these guys. He's not afraid to make comments to the press, but I ended up finding a way to charge him with defamation because he said that I like to sue. You know, that's what I do. That's how I handle my situations. I go after people and I sue. And, you know, there's no way he can know that. And that's not true. I've been sued. I've never sued anybody.
I was about to say, like, if you had sued other people, I think I would have known about it.
Right. So, I mean, it was open and shut to me, but the judge let him off and he said that was his opinion. But that only made my case stronger because, I mean, if they can't prove what that the whole thing was all about, if they can't prove that he was defaming me with that, how can science prove that I was defaming them, which is what the case is all about? So it all falls apart. And even worse so, right now, I'm permitted to head out to Illinois on Sunday. I'm going to be there on Monday morning. And by the afternoon, I'll be sitting down with all these lawyers who are taking over for what's called the liquidation trustee's office. And they're supposed to find every piece of value that's out there. And, of course, the folks with the big bucks are at Fertitta Enterprises. And I wouldn't doubt it for a second if that company had more than just the Fertitta casino family's money into it, but also Tillman Fertitta's cousin might have some money invested in that. This is bigger than it seems. There's very little out there on this for Fertitta Enterprises, and it's like the sword in the stone, sort of, I think, to be able to beat them. Those are the guys where all the money is hidden. They've kind of created companies as surreptitiously as possible underneath the brand of Fertitta Enterprises for some reason. And I think that's where all the money is. We'll eventually find out, but I'm basically going down there to Illinois to settle with Zions and find out if there's a way that I can still retain most of the meaningful part of my case, which is the sanctions motion for $150 million, amend it to take Zions out as the estate, since we'll settle with the estate, and just go after the particulars who were involved in the scheme to bankrupt the company, and take the estate off the hook, and just go after the individuals that I named in the sanctions motion, and also including Fertitta Enterprises. And even if the individuals won't be able to get taken into the bankruptcy, Fertitta Enterprises has already answered a lot of my stuff, so they will have to answer to it at least. So I'll get the money out of them, and I'll be able to interview Frank Fertitta III, Lorenzo Fertitta, and William Bullard, who was the general manager of that company, who's responsible for a lot of this stuff and his signatures on all the dotted lines, if they call a hearing on that, which is my big bet. That's what I'm going to be hoping for, that these guys at the trustee's office can help me out with. So I've got a little bit of a strategy going in. I'm willing to accept a little bit less in a final accounting for the settlement amount if they can work with me legally, you know, because this is a whole law office here we're talking about. This guy holds his own law office and is going to be sitting down with me and he's going to read me all this. So I'm hoping that basically we can work through some kind of arrangement that says, listen, you know, I'm not going to try to squeeze money that you don't have out of the estate. I'll wait, but, you know, let's see what we can do. In the meantime, I'll work for your firm as almost a separate lawyer. I'm not going to be filing any motions for you. I'll do the work. I'll do the homework for the depositions. I'll email these people. I'll talk to them personally over the phone like I've done before. And I'll connect you to all these shareholders who, you know, deserve to have a piece of this company back and you ought to be fighting for as well. You know, I think they are already, but, you know, I can really help make the case and get affidavits for them that I've already gotten. You know, I can get new ones for them that I've already gotten from me from the same people. And I think nobody trusts being a lawyer in this situation, so it will be good to have a contact involved in this helping out. It's not a lawyer, technically. Well, I feel like one sometimes. Not. Let me remind people. But it's been kind of fun in a lot of ways, because it almost feels like you're untouchable when you know that you've got somebody by the short hands. You know, and I've had it happen to me only a few times as an investigative reporter. That's why I kind of laughed and had some nostalgia when I read that comment that you sent me from Facebook. Because I used to try to go for those stories, and I used to get shut down a lot because, you know, the politics wasn't comfortable for the editors. They didn't want to be sued. And I didn't get the real lesson. That's why after I left the newspaper business, but I wouldn't trade it, you know, I wouldn't change things. So it's been fun, and if we can't talk about it, we can't talk about it, but it was worth it either way.
Yeah, right. I mean, that was the one thing that was funny when I was listening to it, and like they were like, recording it, and it's like, is somebody recording this right now? And you're like, no.
Well, it's their courtroom reporter, that's why, because it's an official recording. I went out to Vegas last Halloween, and that was the official recording that I got from the court office. You know, and it was actually, when I put it on that hosting site, it was just taking it directly from the recording software, playing it, and then, you know, you hear a little bit of the mic scuffling, but that's the official recording. So you can get a recording and distribute it, but it can't be a bootleg, is all that it is. That's why it was so easy to let me off, you know, with just an affidavit. And I made a big deal out of it because I wanted to grandstand tomorrow. And I think it worked. The judge was really, I mean, kind of flustered at the end of that. I just wanted to get on. Next thing. Let's go. Anyway, we got 40 seconds left. So next week when I come back, I'm going to have a huge update. And we can talk a little bit more about this, but not too much because we're going to have an official guest. We've had 2 weeks off. So next week we'll have a good guest and I'll promote it. Lots of new stuff. Hopefully some great news. Show for no guest.
All right. Well, yeah. All right. And we will talk again next week.
All right. Adios.